prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror films, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Lance.
And I'm Erica.
And for this episode, we will be discussing a movie that I watched for the first time a few years ago after reading a book called Bleeding Skull, a 1990s trash horror odyssey. And then we had the authors of the book, Annie Choi, Josie Imba, and Zach Carlson. They joined us for an episode back in 2021.
It's our most downloaded episode, folks.
Hell,
Bleeding Skull is very popular with our listeners, and we love them for that.
And it makes sense. I mean, that episode was fun. Not only did they talk about the book, they went over some of their favorite personal films in the book. And one movie really stood out to me. It was one of my favorites that I had seen so far, and it was one of Annie's picks. It was called, Disembodied. And there are so many underseen movies in that book that we can select that are eligible to cover on our podcast, you know, having less than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. But I always kept Disembodied on the list to potentially pick for an episode, and the time has come. So we're going to be discussing Disembodied from 1998, directed by William Kurstin. And as I mentioned, Annie Choi from Bleeding Skull recommended this film. So I thought, who better to have join us, you know, to talk about the film? This is a person who not only put it on my radar, but really championed this film with her writing. And she just made it sound better than anything in the world. And it really is.
Yeah.
So we'd like to welcome Annie Choi to the podcast. Welcome, Annie.
Hi, thanks for having me again.
Yes. Thanks for joining us. Not only do you make up a huge part and write for Bleeding Skull. Yeah, by the way, if nobody's picked up this book yet.
Seriously, folks, come on. We said it enough to pick up the book in that episode. And if you haven't already, what are you doing with your life?
Yeah,
easily. I think it's sold out.
Is it?
I know.
Holy shit.
Sold out on it. I know. So you're going to have to find it in other avenues on the black market.
Oh, no.
It's probably on eBay for like $2,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth it.
Yeah, it's easily my favorite film guide release. Like, I love referencing that book.
Thank you.
But Annie, you've also written a few novels, a few books. Happy Birthday or Whatever, and Shut Up, You're Welcome, Thoughts on Life, Death, and Other Inconveniences.
Yeah, has nothing to do with movies.
Nothing to do with movies, but still a fun read in your writing. You know, that you have Bleeding Skull. It's all very witty and very fun to read.
Yeah,
thank you.
But also, Video Vortex has made its return to Alamo Drafthouse programming, which I know you're a part of.
Yeah, so Joe, who's the founder of Bleeding Skull, and my partner, we have both started doing Video Vortex in Austin and in New York City. Hopefully expand to other cities, but yeah, it's back, baby.
Yes.
So exciting.
Yes.
So much fun. And it's all mysteries. So we don't announce it. We don't even hint. We kind of hinted, I guess. But it's really just meant for people with an open mind and, you know, warriors is who I call it. It's for warriors. Like, you have no idea what you're going to get.
Yeah.
So I love the series. It's been super fun.
I squeed when I saw a trailer for it. I was at Draft House for Terror Tuesday, and I saw a Video Vortex trailer, and I was like, it's back, baby.
Yeah, it's back, baby. Yeah, we've been working on it. You know, during the pandemic, it went away, and when we came back, we didn't have the staffing for it. So now we're back, and we're, like, so excited about it. And also, the mystery element of it really just, you know, really opens it up for us, and then which allows other people to, like, really experience all the stuff that we've always wanted to show, but not necessarily could for various reasons.
Sure. Can you, just for folks who maybe are in Austin or New York and this is available to them, explain, like, what the how Video Vortex is different from, say, Terror Tuesday or Weird Wednesday or any of the other regular series that Alamo has?
Sure. So Video Vortex, so Terror Tuesday is mostly obviously horror, and Weird Wednesday is mostly exploitation or anything sort of off the beaten path. It could be a studio movie that was really not seen, or a studio movie that was like, what were you thinking? Mm-hmm. It could also be very low budget, you know, kung fu films from Hong Kong. I mean, it Weird Wednesday just kind of spans the whole universe of cinema. And Video Vortex is like the crazy, what I like to call like the crazy little sister who chops the heads off of dolls and like, you know, attaches firecrackers to them. So Video Vortex is definitely like a more underground, something maybe more cult or something that's not allowed to be screened or seen, stuff that was definitely not released necessarily worldwide on home video. Sometimes you could find it in overseas, or maybe they just made a few copies here. And it's, we kind of built it around, and like, if you came over to my house and I got you really high and I was like, you gotta watch this. Oh my God. It's like that. That's kind of the vibe. It's like, you have no idea what you're going to get into, but you know, you're in good hands by two crazy outlandish people who really want to like really make you enjoy watching these things and being alive, and just knowing that there's films out like this out there that you'll probably never see if you were just browsing on Letterboxd, or it's certainly not on any kind of streaming platform.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back in 2017 and like through 19, I went to a bunch of them, and that was the first time I saw like Demon Wind, Desperation Rising. I mean, Death Warrior, Soul Tangler.
Yeah.
Killing Spree was the first.
Killing Spree.
Just to give a taste of what some of these movies are like. I mean, they're the best.
Yeah, for sure. And then the Video Vortex in the past, we kind of limited to films that were, you know, direct to video or only available on VHS. And then since then, those have come out on Blu-ray,
right? Yeah.
Which is great for the movies. But yeah, this one, we're less limited about the format and more limited or more expansive around like, what's the kind of underground vibe, or what's like the excitement, what can't be screened, or what is a truly special, crazy, it could be a documentary, it could be animation, it could be, you know, it just spans all kinds of, it's beyond genre. It's just more like, to me, the underlying theme that groups all these movies together is that they are incredibly unique and you've never heard of them. I mean, if you have, kudos.
So are the formats different? They're not only VHS, but there might be prints and stuff?
There probably won't be prints. Okay. I don't want to limit anything about what we say. But yeah, I don't think we're doing prints. We're really doing like, you know, they could be bootlegs. They could, you know, they could be something that was released overseas on DVD or something like that. But yeah, so they're different sources for sure, but it's never, I don't think it's ever going to be a print.
Yeah, well, it's going to be like the best day of the month, whatever month.
Yeah, it's the last Monday of every month, and we're hopefully going to bring it to other cities. I think San Francisco is interested, but no promises there.
Cool. Yeah, so Video Vortex, we're all excited about. And also I mentioned on the Bleeding Skull episode, I'm just going to give another shout out because I do love the band that you and Joe make up, Taking the Savages. I love it. I hope you guys, if there's plans for more, I'll probably close out this episode with one of those songs, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so Disembodied. This is the movie we're talking about, right? So it currently has 545 views on Letterboxd. It is available to watch on Tubi. It seems to be the same version on the Blu-ray release that's out there by Brink Vision. But it's worth noting that the newer release has these updated digital effects and new music, which was pointed out on that you pointed out, Annie, you and Joe, that episode. So there's a VHS copy out there released by Dead Alive Productions. If you want to see it in the original state, I'd love to see it in the original state. Also, if you have the VHS, kudos to you, because I looked it up, and it is on eBay, but it's like $185, $200.
Ooh. Oh, the VHS market is so insane.
I know.
Like, I don't, it's crazy. But yeah, I think the VHS version of this is clearly the more superior version of this. I think we all, most of us agree that when directors go back and have to retool things, it tends to not be as good, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, and I get there's limitations. I mean, we can go like to the George Lucas special editions.
Yeah, exactly.
For example.
Yeah.
And so they really like go hard with these digital effects for like re-releases.
Right.
You're right. it loses a little of its like endearing effect and the DIY that I love so much in these movies.
And I'm not going to try to advocate for this in any way, shape, or form, because obviously like we'd want to like see it in its original format. But if you have the means to find the VHS rip on legal adjacent means, it is out there. I'm just saying, I don't normally like to advocate for that. We do want to support the artists and their however you can. But I'm just saying, if you really want to be a purist and watch it and you don't want to shell out $200 for VHS, it does exist. So there's that.
Yeah, there's means.
There's always a way.
Okay, so we typically do a quick summary of the film we're covering. And before I attempt this, I'm going to try this.
Good job. I'm saying good job like ahead of time, because I'm just applauding you for even attempting the summary.
Annie, there's a favorite line from your review of Disembodied in the Bleeding Skull book. It's one of the last sentences where you say, describing Disembodied is like describing your acid trip to someone. Words fail the actual experience. Which
100%,
it's very true. I mean, if I try and sound like, you know, the times I did acid, like when I was in my teens and 20s, which was like, what, a decade ago? I'm that young.
It's like last year.
We're babies here. Whatever. We're children here.
Yeah, I mean, it's an intimate experience, and it's something that I'll always remember. But if I try and explain it to somebody, mm-hmm. I'll sound like an insane person.
Right.
So,
which is okay.
Exactly.
But yeah, not what you necessarily was the goal of the conversation.
So yeah, I'm gonna sound like an insane person here as I attempt to give you a simple, quick synopsis of Disembodied.
Do you want some gummies before you start?
I already started. That was my breakfast. I'm good.
All right.
Okay, so we follow Connie Sprouts, a young woman who's just checked herself into a shitty hotel with only one vacant room available, which is in the basement with the boiler. She unpacks her luggage, which includes a strange electronic machine and a jar holding her own brain. Her brain is not in her own skull because there's an alien setting up shop in her head. And we find this alien organism infests the human host like a neural parasite, occupying the skull cavity while maintaining the host's brain externally. The body is internally altered and several new organs are formed, which we get to see as Connie has this spitting protrusion on the side of her face that liquefies human victims to feed on their brains. We also get to see her give birth to a few of these vagina monsters.
They're vaginas.
So Connie's on the move as host to this parasite, but she carries with her the damp dream machine, which is something she created that prevents the dreams of the alienated dreams from becoming physically real. However, she starts having issues with this machine and shit starts getting out of hand. During this time, she makes friends with a girl with a very bubbly personality, Trixie, who is renting the room next door, while a Dr. Sigmund Sylvanus from the Plasmaster Corporation is out to stop and destroy Connie. That's
wow.
That is really good.
That is amazing. That, right? I just made all that up. Right? Which is what Disembodied is, which I love.
Yeah.
It's
just
a complete mind fuck, and it makes you rethink everything you just say or think about the movie. Okay, so the crew of Disembodied is literally three people, okay, for the most part. I actually reached out to the director, William Kirsten.
You did?
Yeah, Bill, as I like to call him.
Oh, you're friends now.
Yeah. Oh, you're like besties?
Yeah, we're besties. I he has a site of his own that it's williamkirsten.com that I found when I was, you know, doing some info, some notes for this episode. It focuses like predominantly on his music. He does a lot of like orchestral stuff.
Oh my God, does he, him and Al Passeri, we need to get them together.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I do like about this. I think I have some Passeri notes on this.
Okay.
On the same level. But yeah, if anybody wants to check out his site, he covers, you know, all his films are on there. No, they're not on there, but, you know, he has like brief little history of his filmography and his music. But he was very courteous with his time. We went back and forth a couple of times. Cool. I just asked him a few questions that I thought might be interesting for the podcast. And he was very attentive. Like, he would reply same day. He loved talking about Disembodied and his work. So very, very generous man.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But he explained that Disembodied has a very checkered history, to put it mildly. It was first distributed in 1998 by a company called Dead Alive Productions, and they made some money off of it, distributing VHS across the American South, selling it to Japan. But Kirsten and the involved filmmakers, they never saw a cent. And it appeared to be doing fairly well, selling copies and whatnot. So after a while of receiving nothing from Dead Alive, he demanded to get out of the contract, and they sent back the Videomaster, which of course he had to pay for to get back. Mm-hmm. And they sent it in a paper envelope, which is very shitty of them.
Classic.
So, yeah, I mean, he basically called them scumbags. He said the company, you know, the company's since gone out of business. Apparently the CEO got in some legal trouble, but
shocking. You
know, and then he had the film sitting in storage, in a storage cabinet for more than a decade. And he finally decided to transfer the 16mm negative to HD video in 2015. He did a remastered version of it and contacted Brink Vision Films, which is the Blu-ray release that's out there.
Right.
But sadly, they did pretty much the same thing that Dead Alive did. After distributing on Blu-ray and also streaming, not 1 cent paid through their creative accounting. Very sad. Sucks. He was very open about it, and he admitted that this is what happens to a lot of low-budget filmmakers. You know, if you can't afford an attorney, usually because you spend everything you have making this film,
right,
you're basically screwed. So he pulled it from Brink Vision, and since 2022, since last year, he has it just on FilmHub, which is a transparent mechanical distribution company that just goes to streaming services. Mm-hmm. And it has earned some money, which is great for him.
Good, right? Yeah.
He's very, it's very exciting, obviously. He can see all the reporting. He can see exactly, you know, all the actual earnings, where it's being distributed. He jokingly said that he may have a special dinner exclusively with the earnings he's made so far.
Aww. I mean, he just wants dinner.
Yeah. Nice dinner, I hope. I mean,
what a sweet man.
He's very aware of Letterboxd, though. And he pointed out that he's noticed recently a large number of great reviews and people who seem to know exactly what he and the involved cast and crew were going for with Disembodied. So, I mean, that seemed very rewarding for him. It seemed like, you know, it's fun to see, and it's cool that he's keeping tabs on all this stuff. But yeah, concerning the production, Disembodied was, like I said, essentially made by three people besides the actors. William Kirsten, who wrote it, he directed it, did the effects, stop motion animation, set designs, editing. He basically had a hand in everything to get his film made. A man named Jim Dietrichson, who also played the night clerk in the movie, and Bob Richardson. And Kirsten mentioned that both of these guys were just brilliant people, wonderful to work with, have since sadly passed away, both of them. Aww. But he said that Jim did all the makeup effects, literally cooking latex in the oven of his small house. He also helped a lot with the script ideas and just overall inspiration, as well as helping with editing the film. And Bob Richardson helped with constructing the sets, getting the actors, whom he knew from the Arena Theater area, and just general production assistance during shooting. Once in a while, he said a couple of people he knew would show up to paint a section of the set. But for the most part, Bill and Bob did all the set construction by themselves, which I think
amazing.
Was great, especially that hotel room and that fucking bathroom.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that bathroom.
And the shooting was done mainly with 16mm Bolex spring-wound cameras. And for all the dialogue scenes, they borrowed a big, heavy Oricon Sync motor 16mm camera.
Damn.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah, and then for the HD video release, Kirsten decided what we already kind of talked about. He decided to redo some of the Dream special effects using these fluorescent pastel artwork and some sculpted objects filmed digitally. You can tell when you watch these versions, they really, it's like, okay. Yeah, as we had already pointed out, he also redid the music score, which the new score he composed in the 50s horror sci-fi style. This is his quote, using Vienna Symphonic Library orchestral samples. He said he still has the old synth score and the effects as separate scenes, and he is working on a new Blu-ray release that should be out later this year. I was kind of like, whoa, what's going on with that? You know, trying to get some more details out of him. I wasn't I wasn't prodding too much, but he said, yeah, I look for it maybe like in late fall or so.
Okay.
But he's planning to release all the scent score and those original effects as special features, which would be great. One thing I did want to point out, though, on that Brink Vision Blu-ray, there are a few bonus features on there. There's an odd black and white version with isolated color that's available to watch. And I asked him about this because I picked up the Brink Vision. I felt bad after... Yeah, after he told me the history, and I was like, I got it on eBay for like $9. And, you know,
okay.
I don't think Brink Vision's gone. Can't really buy it anywhere. But
sure.
But yeah, he said that this black and white version was just an experiment that he wanted to try, and he's kind of already turned away from it. It won't be on any future releases.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just kind of an experiment, something fun he was trying. And then it has a few outtakes, like just some more scenes of like all the cosmos and alien planets. Mm-hmm. It's black white style art. There is a cool scene, and it might be in the original, but you know where that scene of Connie reading the book about like metaphysics in her hotel room?
Mm-hmm.
This bonus scene has like all these texts and pictures kind of floating over her, filling the screen, and it looks really cool.
Oh, I don't think that was on the tape.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, to me, it reminded me of just like, you know, she's inhabited by this like weird alien, but like she's soaking in all this knowledge, kind of like Johnny Five or something.
It's like that beautiful mind meme where it's like all the equations floating around.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, William Kurstin also directed a few other feature films. His first film was a 60-minute science fiction called Wart from 1984. And he admitted that it was an extremely amateurish Super 8 film, which he still has, and he may share it at some point. But the summary, which I pulled off of his site, sounds really interesting to me, about a woman scientist who attempts to travel back in time to save her mad artist sister from committing suicide. Ironically, she gets herself killed in an auto accident as a result, creating a fatal time loop. And the irony is compounded by the fact that her sister was the driver and committed suicide as a result of the trauma of killing her own sister.
Oh.
To me, that sounds like a wet dream for those Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead guys. You know, they did all those weird time loop movies.
Yeah.
Like, this sounds like something that they would just, like, gush over.
Yeah.
Then he made a film in 1989 with Bob Richardson also helping out again, which was called Remember Tomorrow, which Kurstin said is just totally gone at this point. He admitted it wasn't very good. But he still liked the story. It was 2 years of just like this huge amount of work with constructions, shot in 16mm, but the print was lost. He does have the music. He did the score. He does the music for all his movies, and it's on Spotify. It's called Remember Tomorrow, The Lost Score, if anybody's interested.
What's interesting about the score for, you know, Disembodied is that it's so much of it is so quiet.
Yeah.
Like, I recall this movie it has a score, but what I love about it is how quiet it is. There's like barely any dialogue. There's long silences. And I love that about this movie because normally you know, these things can get really crazy soundtrack wise, but I love a movie that just takes in silence that makes it all more, all the more creepier, I think.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think like the sound design is, I mean, I think it's stronger than the score, the redone score. Like when there's no music, I like it best.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people, like there's a lot of comparing movies, especially with Disembodied. You know, there's a lot of movies to compare this to, but it does like just the mood it sets with like, it's like background noise of just like light wind blowing, or you can hear like air blowing through pipes within that hotel. And it sounds very like Eraserhead. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
Even like The Shining that has that just constant drone going on, you kind of feel in Disembodied where it just sets you into a mood. It's an experience. And it's not like you said, Annie, a soundtrack, but it's just the sound effects that really work.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's like one of my favorite, there's many things that I love about this movie, but that struck me when I first watched it.
Yeah.
Like just so quiet but not in a way that felt like low budget quiet, if that makes sense. It felt like intentional quiet.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. But yeah. And then Kurstin, he also more recently, he's been making these stop motion animation shorts, which they're all on his site. He has like a YouTube video. I found them engrossing. There's no dialogue in these whatsoever. It's, again, with these, they're fairly short, but it's all mood in these like fantastic visuals, very similar to Disembodied. He does the music, but it's more of the sound design that I find very intriguing of these shorts. But yeah, you could watch them all for like 40, I think he has four on his site, watch them within 45 minutes. They kind of tie into the dreamlike quality of Disembodied. Like I noticed there's similarities, a lot of like the claymation shapes and stuff that's in Disembodied, they're in these as well. Some of the shared like cosmos scenes that he added to the digital release of Disembodied, they pop up within these as well. Definitely check them out, williamkirsten.com. I mean, they're cool stuff to watch. And the cast real quick. So the cast, they're unknown actors, most with no other film credits other than Disembodied. As noted on Kirsten's website, they're all actors from the Reno area. Anastasia Wolverton plays the lead role of Connie Sprouts, who is, I know we'll talk about a lot about her performance in a bit, but she's amazing in this. Mm-hmm. Hannah Cooper plays Trixie Turner, the girl who lives next door. Already said Jim Dieterickson, who's one of the three guys that helped make the movie. He plays that creepy night clerk who I just love.
Like, I know he's creepy, but I would watch those educational movies with him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's got, I mean, they're on film. Like, I appreciate his devotion.
He's devoted, yeah. He might have some hidden gems in his little stash there. You never know.
Could be something for Video Vortex.
Hell yeah.
And then there were two veterans of the Reno area theater at the time, Patricia Matthews, who plays the cleaning lady, and George Randolph, who plays Dr. Sigmund Sylvanus. Randolph played a character, Jean Jean, in George Clooney's Confessions of a Dangerous Mind from 2002. I've never seen it. I don't know how big the role is, but he does have a character name. And he's also has some television series credits. And that's it for the cast and crew. So let's dive in. Annie, in your book, you also said about Disembodied that it's a hallucinogenic adventure, and like Acid, you need a certain mental wherewithal to watch it. It's well worth trying. I mean, this is definitely a movie that stays with you after watching it, but can you hit on some of the elements that you think make it worth scrambling your brains and your favorite parts?
To me, this movie, just like all my favorite movies out of the book and just in general, are ones that are incredibly ambitious. So stop motion animation, I don't know if you've ever done it, but it requires a certain level of insanity to do. It is incredibly meticulous and a little brain numbing, but kind of fun, but it is very repetitive. So it's for a filmmaker, an independent DIY filmmaker to like, decide that, like, you know, most of the special effects will be stop motion requires a level of ambition that I will never have in my life. So right off the bat, that this Disembodied is really great example of you don't need digital effects to make something incredibly engaging. You don't need an explosion. You don't need anything. You just need like a bunch of clay and like a really great design. And so to me, it's what you can do with animation, I think. I mean, I work with a lot of animation for my day job. So anything that requires like sculpting or moving, you know, you're very limited by the form that you're using,
right.
Which of course I know that makes sense, but like with digital, you can do whatever the fuck you want. Mm-hmm. You know, you can move things from here to there. And when you're working with something like clay or something with collage, you really don't have that. So you're very much limited. And the choices that you make, I think, ends up being sort of really fantastic and unique. So that to me makes this completely surreal because it's like things, it's like a beast you've never seen before, even though it looks like a vagina and many of us have seen one. The way it moves, and the way it, you can manipulate it. Oh my God, this sounds crazy. I'm leaning in. Makes it super crazy and fun to watch. You really have no idea what to expect and how it's going to change. And I really gravitate towards that. So yes, like an acid trip, you have no idea what's going to happen next, especially when it comes to the animation. And it's like the colors in it, like everything about it, it's because it's so quiet and because it's so surreal. Then you have these like crazy animations and you have some gore, or you have, what is the most disgusting bathroom? it's like an acid trip that's like almost going to be bad. You know, it's just right on the edge. And, I love that adventure about it.
It's like when you make that mistake when you're on acid of looking in the mirror and you're like, oh God, no.
Oh my God. But it also can't stop.
And that's what it does. I mean, some of the effects, like, I mean, the claymation, stop motion animation, those are my favorite moments, because I think a lot of people nowadays are kind of used to, you know, big studios kind of, they're kind of cutting corners, but there's a lot of cool looking digitally made effects. But when you see something like these claymations, you know, when you see it climbing up a, you know, a leg of a table and into a jar that's holding a brain, it's just so endearing. And they're my favorite moments. But the added digital effects, like the cosmos and like the volcano erupting and a bunch of the lighting effects, it made me feel very, you know, Alvaro Passeri and like late Luigi Cozzi. And again, throw in all these comparisons might annoy some people, but it's endearing and it's in a completely different way than just having what I think is fascinating and so much hard work and patience and claymation and practical effects. But when you combine them together like this for this updated version, it's like,
super
what is happening? Like it's like, it's an acid trip from the 80s and then an acid trip from like, you know, the 2000s. There's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
But those little creatures kind of reminded me too of Graydon Clark's Without Warning, you know, especially where they suck.
They
go on the windshield of the car. There's a scene with Martin Landau and it's like this vagina sucking mouth.
Why do all creatures have to look like dicks or vaginas? Like, there are other shapes.
Yeah,
there are other shapes.
They're the universal symbols that everyone recognizes.
Yeah,
or at least we hope that you do.
Yeah.
And like you had mentioned too, the set design and construction is one of my favorite parts of this movie too. And it is kind of a single location. There's some exterior shots, but it's all about the hotel and the bathroom and then that boiler in the room. And like, Bob and the director, William Kirsten, they kind of knocked it out of the park with the budget they had and the look of the film.
Yeah,
they really nailed it. It's its own like little world. There's no sort of hint that it could be taking place in, you know, our world.
Right. It was released in 1998, but I love 90s horror. I know, Erica, it's a sore subject for you, but I love the whole aesthetic of 90s. Like, it just works for me. But Disembodied is way more timeless. Like, it could be made within the last, any time between like the last like 50 years. But it does have its 90 moments. I mean, like the Soundgarden black hole sun morphing effect that pops up a lot. Connie Sprout, her fashion is timeless, but it also screams 90s.
It's very 90s angst. Yeah. Like, I rock that hair in middle school. I get it. You know, like, yes, I'm not a fan of 90s horror. I want to clarify mainstream 90s horror. Tell me, hey, Erica, there's this horror movie from the 90s, I'm like taking two steps back. But then if you say it's this DIY shot on video, I'm taking three steps forward.
Yeah,
you know?
Like
yeah. Okay.
I do love Connie Sprout's, her whole look, the black leather jacket with the red lining. Mm-hmm. The boots with the white socks,
she's rocking it. Yeah.
Yeah. She is awesome. There's also a scene too, I think, where she's walking around, and looking at, you know, like some Transformers and stuff and like taking off her sunglasses, but she's wearing this ring that's very 90s fashion. It's like this silver ring with like celestial, like moons and stars all over it. And I was like, I think I had that ring.
I think one of the, to go back to the comment about it being so timeless, I think, you know, one of the things that it really quotes, this movie quotes other movies around, like, you know, those 50s movies with that, you know, The Brain That Wouldn't Die, for example, mm-hmm. like it definitely has that like 50s sci-fi, aliens have come, your brain is in a jar and has, you know, and then sort of, I was also thinking of like The Man with Two Brains with Steve Martin, because there are moments of like kind of levity, like, oh, I need caffeine. And she pours coffee into her brain. And I was like, oh, that's a great gag. And, yeah. you know, something that we've seen, you know, in the 80s comedies that were kind of quoting the 50s sci-fi. So I think those elements plus, you know, the practical effects is really what kind of makes this such a timeless movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're sure. never going to be sad of a brain that, you know, won't die. I'm just not going to get sad about that. Yeah.
Yeah. The 1950s science fiction horror element is definitely there. And I think it's real prominent with Sigmund Silvanus.
Oh, yeah.
Like, one of my favorite scenes is when he's listening to the recorder of, I think it's Dr. Brainerd, you know, speak about the alien. And that whole scene, the way it's filmed, I guess that's when they borrowed that huge, that 16 millimeter film for the dialogue scene, but you can,
yeah.
it looks grainy. The color, it's like a green background, kind of a green room, the way he's like overacting. And it that feels very 1950s science yeah. fiction. Horror.
Very big.
Yeah. Love it. Yes. So I mean, what are some of your favorite elements, Erica?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, but I don't want to get too redundant with what's already been kind of talked about. The stop motion for sure. And a lot of that is, you know, nostalgia for me, because you've talked before, Lance, about how whenever you have, you know, when it comes to DIY movies, you have a special soft spot for it because you and your friends used to make, like, you know, the Crow knockoffs or whatever,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, so yeah. Fill up VHS tapes.
Yeah.
Love it.
But like, I actually tried my hand at stop motion when I was a kid, uh-huh. like with my Play-Doh. I was like, all right, here we go. Let's try this. And yeah, it's fucking tedious. It's a pain in the
so
ass.
Tedious.
And you do all this shit and it's like 5 seconds.
Right.
And
I'm 2 days later, you're all okay. I moved his arm.
Yeah.
Right.
So I gave up pretty quickly on it, but whenever I see it, I definitely appreciate the work that goes into that. And then Connie just, you know, birthing.
Yes.
The vaginas. I mean, it honestly, however, you know, whatever she's doing to birth them, it seems much more pleasant than pushing out some 8-pound jam covered goblin. So like, and then she like puts them in a pot and puts them in like, you know, like some soil and like, yeah. and I'm like, well, she's starting her own line of Cabbage Patch Kids. Like, this is awesome. You know, you just, it's got all these elements that you're like, I don't know why this is happening, but I love it. And that's what I like. I like being kept on my toes. I like, you know, like Annie mentioned, the sort of quietness about it. I like the minimal amount of dialogue in it as well. I like that karate chop at the end when Trixie's at the lab saving Connie.
To make her drop the gun.
Yeah, he's like, yeah. chop. That's great. There's that moment where the night clerk, he's got his arm through the wall reaching after her. And like she opens all the drawers and it's like rocks, wires, clothes with a hacksaw and hacksaw. And then she just, I'm just like, I love it. Like that's how I want my dresser to be packed.
Chaos.
And instead it's just yoga pants. So
right.
Yeah, that scene with the night clerk getting his arm cut off. I mean, the gore is, there's not a lot in this movie. I mean, there's her, like, you know, giving birth and, you know, throwing stuff in the tub, but the gore scenes that are there are freaking amazing. The night clerk getting his arm cut off, when he gets, you know, squirted by the, you know, the penis protrusion on her face, and he starts melting and his floppy hand just falls on the ground. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Connie, you know, jumping in the end, but it's kind of self-destructing at the end, where it's a classic kind of like hammer horror, like their bodies disintegrating
yeah.
before your eyes. Yeah. Super great stuff. But like I said, I love Dr. Sigmund Silvanus, adding that 1950s kind of sci-fi element to it. There is very minimal dialogue, but the dialogue that's on there is usually pretty humorous. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the back and forth, especially mm-hmm. with like Trixie, who's very bubbly and kind of this positive and only friend to Connie. But one of my favorite scenes is at the end, when Trixie asks Silvanus, can you carry a tune? And he's so literal. Like, he has no sense of humor, this doctor. So he's like, what? Can I carry a tune? Yes, as a matter of fact, I happen to have sung in the baritone with the barbershop quartet, but I fell to see the relevance. And that's when she does, like, you know, like,
yeah,
the karate chop stuff's happening and stuff. But yeah, I love the performances. Patricia Matthews is the cleaning lady. As soon as she pops up, like, in her whole kind of Lucille Ball cleaning outfit, another 50s element that kind of helps make this timeless, but she just made me smile. Like, I mean, all these characters that pop, the night clerk is a lot. Like,
yeah, it's a lot.
he's a lot, but his scenes, I mean, they're short scenes. This movie is very short, you know?
I know. Can we just take a pause and appreciate a 75-minute movie?
Yes.
Like,
5-minute movie.
Oh God. Like, can we just make all movies that?
Exactly.
Yes. Like, do we need 3 hours? I don't think so. I don't. I think you can tell a story in 75 minutes. I believe in us. I think we can do it.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I did ask William Kirsten what his favorite scenes of these films were.
Oh.
Because, you know, like, what are your personal favorite scenes? And his basically are the comedic elements, it sounds like.
Oh.
The dialogue driven stuff. He loves when the night clerk at the beginning welcomes Connie, and he tries to, and the scenes where he tries to interest, you know, her into watching this collection of educational documentaries. he said he likes the scenes with Trixie and Dr. Sylvanus, and the scene in his van where she's being kind of sarcastic and playful the whole time, but he remains completely serious. Which is kind of like that Can You Carry a Tune thing.
Yeah.
What did he say? He loves Trixie when she starts talking about her backstory about the flower children. I think it sounds like he really enjoyed working with actors, from what I could tell. Because, like, I was like, well, my favorite scene is when the vagina monster falls. Yeah.
tell me more about the vagina and the bathtub.
I think he liked the humor and you know, trying to make the humor of Connie's situation with Trixie kind of, you know, providing the friendship and a sense of protection, which I get, you know, it moves the story along. It adds the element of a lot more people can watch it instead of just, you know, some sort of crazy vagina monster movie. But
yeah,
those were his favorite scenes, mostly the back and forth between the characters and the dialogue.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah. Thanks,
yeah, thank you for making this movie.
I'm going to try it.
And for making it 75 minutes.
Yeah.
Those are the best. That's why I want to try and reach out and, like, convince him to, can I see some of your more early work?
Yeah.
I don't show anybody, I swear.
Well, maybe the Blu-ray that he mentioned that's coming out is going to have that stuff on there.
I hope so.
Special features.
And, like, and we already gushed over the stop motion animation, but that's all he's doing now as far as these shorts. Some are like 17 minutes, some are like 4 minutes. They all have this, like, it's a universe he created, because they're kind of sequels to each other.
Oh.
And it's a lot of work, and he does a fantastic job. Like, it's good stuff. So more 17-minute stop motion animation shorts, Bill, or 75-minute disembodied type films.
Yes, please.
Love it. Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to talk about the film, Annie?
No. I mean, this is probably the most exhaustive discussion I've ever had.
Obviously, we recommend it to people.
Of course.
My God, yeah. This is of the, you know, we watched, I don't know how many hundreds of movies, I lost count, and for the 1990s book. And not all of them were great, but we'll put that out there. And of the ones that were great, there are ones that were exceptional. And to me, this was exceptional. Like, I saw it, like, in the first, I think the first 15 minutes, I was like, oh shit, this one's a good one. This one's like a gem.
Yeah.
So, and I still think about it all the time, of like, whenever I see a vagina, I think of.
Same. It's a movie that sticks with you. I mean, it becomes a memory. It's like it could be a bad or a good acid trip. You know, keep going back to that analogy that you wrote in the book. It's super creative. It's just an original idea, and I'm so happy that it's out there in the world. So, yeah, recommend it.
12 out of 10. No notes.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay, so we had talked about a lot of comparisons. You could read a bunch of comparisons on Letterboxd, like on Letterboxd reviews, mine included. I kind of throw out some of my favorite things from some of my favorite movies, because Disembodied is like a melting pot of, like, my favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
Annie, if you had to pick a double feature for Disembodied, where would you go?
Ugh. So you told me to like prepare and my brain was like, oh, so, you know, the obvious one is A Brain That Wouldn't Die, because I think it's a movie that not people forgot about, even though it's quoted all the time, just like this sci-fi opus and seeing how it relates to this movie. But because I'm me, I want something a little like crazier. So I thought like, well, what is a movie with really great stop motion? And one I thought of was Gakudama, which is a Japanese movie from 1985. There's a little beastie. It also has something to do with vaginas. And that one's super fun and goopy and based off of sort of like a Japanese folktale or folklore. So it's kind of got, it has this like very rich history attached to it in addition to it being just like a romping good time. And then another movie I thought of that was similarly very ambitious in DIY is Empire of the Dark, which is from.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's from 1990.
It's in the book, because I remember Zach's write-up of that one, and I watched it. And that the director of that one actually just passed this year.
Yeah. So I thought of that because that's a movie that's ambitious in a similar way, but it also has stop motion, but it has a bunch of other stuff in it that's completely batshit.
Yeah.
So I thought those two, I could go on forever with other movies, but I think Gakudama or Empire of the Dark would pair really well with us.
Can you spell, would you mind spelling the first one for our listeners in case they want to look it up?
Oh, sure. It's Gakidama.
Perfect. Thank you.
We've actually screened it at, is it Terror Tuesday? You know, all the series for me, like,
yeah.
Together. But yeah, so I've shown it before in Brooklyn. But oh, yeah, nice. I love it. Yeah, I love it. It's the movie I will never get tired of watching again.
Awesome.
Any other, or those are the two you're sticking with, Annie?
Well, you know, there's, and then I was like the surreal element of the quietness. Mm-hmm. I thought of an anime, Curse of Kazuo Mezu, which I think Joe played at Terror Tuesday in Austin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That has this like quiet sort of foreboding that I think is very similar. That's in Disembodied, like this sort of quiet, creepy horror. You're not really sure what's going to happen, but you're sort of engrossed. And then another one is Beyond Dream's Door from 1989.
Oh, yeah.
Which I love that one. And that also has this like very surreal, dreamy, like nightmarish vibe. It's vibes, as the kids say, which they don't even say anymore. So I'm like totally dating myself, but you know. It's vibes.
I know exactly what you mean.
It's a mood.
Cool. What about you, Erica, for a double feature pick?
I went a few different places. I think there, like Annie said, I think there are a few like obvious picks, and I think some more mainstream horror ones for folks could be, you know, Hen and Lauder's Brain Damage.
Oh yeah.
Or Basket Case.
You could go Basket Case. I like that, like the brain part, like with Almer and everything like that. And I love Almer and like his voice. And so I can't. Maybe like Cronenberg, just, you know, for the body horror element. I think Rabbit especially, just,
right.
You know, because you have a female protagonist with a foreign object on her body that requires blood and her flesh to survive. So you could go The Brood, you know, for the, you know, birthing aspect even, I think.
Yeah.
But ultimately I landed on the 50s sci-fi part, not necessarily like A Brain in a Jar. But I went with a movie called The Man Without a Body from 1957. And it's about this rich guy who has a brain tumor. And so his solution to that is that he wants to find the most brilliant brain that has ever existed. And he finds a scientist who is able to bring like a monkey brain back to life after it had been buried for like 6 years. So the rich guy goes to dig up Nostradamus, takes his head, and then they revive Nostradamus's head. So Nostradamus's head is like on the table, like talking. And the rich guy is like trying to convince him, like, no, you're going to be me now. Your brain is going to go in my body. And Nostradamus is like, this is against nature. And blah. And it's great. It's like this fun, campy 50s sci-fi movie. I think it would complement it really well. It doesn't quite have the same going on, you know, thematically, obviously, but the vibe, as we will say here, is a little bit different, but I love those goofy ones. And this one I turned on like thinking like, we'll see. It's another very short one. It's under 80 minutes.
Nice.
So yeah, you get in and out with a double feature in under 3 hours. I mean, you can't ask for less than that. What about you, Lance?
Okay. Yeah. So there were, I thought of the same thing. I thought of Rabid for sure. Cronenberg's Rabid, Eraserhead, the little dialogue, the sound design, the sets, the very industrial exterior shots. I watched this movie called Love God from 1997, directed by Frank Groh. It shares a lot of the what the fuck elements that's in Disembodied, including like weird worm creatures that kill humans. Takes place in a seedy hotel with a bunch of odd occupants. It would actually work well because it's completely opposite in pacing because it moves at like 100 miles per hour.
Oh,
literally feels like you're watching it at double speed. I know I've talked about that like with Portrait of Crystal or.
Oh yeah.
But this one is like, oh my God, it would turn a lot of people off, but it would kind of pair well with Disembodied, which has some deliberate pacing, but it's a little too much for me. So I actually, I asked my friend Bill what his double feature pick would be. So I was like, if you could pick a double feature pick for this, what would it be? And I'm going to go ahead and pick his. That way we share it with everybody on our socials and stuff. Sure. And that is, it's on a site, which was WilliamKirsten.com, but it's Daughter of Horror or Dementia from 1955. Really quick, under an hour. I saw this actually, on a 35mm Agfa print at Dismember the Alamo. I think it was 2018.
Nice.
That sounds familiar.
But yeah, it's directed by John Parker, starring Adrian Barrett, who is just amazing and completely captivating, very much like Anastasia Wolverton. And this is made in 1955, but it feels timeless. It feels like it could come out today. Filmed in black and white. It has no dialogue at all whatsoever. It's about a young woman who, again, I said Adrian Barrett is just amazing. She wakes up in this hotel, and we follow her throughout a single evening as she reflects on past murders and murders she's committing throughout the evening. Short runtime, it's just kind of this whole mood, again, with no dialogue. It's captivating to watch. Like I said, it runs under an hour. So, I mean, this would be, you could watch these in under almost under 2 hours, watch Disembodied and throw on Dementia.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm picking Bill's. Bill said that this was the inspiration for him to write Disembodied. I think it was initially called Connie's Dream, mm-hmm. which kind of hits more on Dementia. But he said like a bunch of the rewrites, I think they named it Aberration at one point.
Okay.
But as they, as he worked with the other guys, they kind of changed it up a little and it kind of deviated from Dementia, but he's, basically, this was the inspiration for Disembodied. So I'd start off with that, then jump into Disembodied.
Excellent.
I love it.
Sweet. I think it's on Tubi, too, if anybody did want to catch
it. I just looked it up. It is.
Yeah. Okay, sweet. All right. Well, that's it. Annie, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and talking about this movie.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thanks for all
I'm
the
good.
No, I mean, thanks for all the work you do to help get movies like this out there and onto people's watch lists, because like I said, you put this movie on my radar and I appreciate it and it makes my life better. So.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. This is, it's a fun, it's like a hobby and a joy to bring these movies out to people. And
awesome.
I'm excited that people are listening and reading.
Yeah. I think it was one of your other recommendations in the last episode too was Frostbiter. And yeah, that one just got a Blu-ray from Vinegar Syndrome. And like, as soon as they announced that release, I was like, you guys got to watch this. Annie recommended it. It's the fucking greatest thing. And there's a Chili song and you're going to be singing along with it. And come on, folks, like Frostbiter. And I think I converted a few people, but just a few.
That's another little stop motion buddy in there.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of people are jumping ship on social media, but is there any place that people can follow you and find your existing work and what you might be currently working on?
Well, Bleeding Skull, as always, on Instagram. We don't do much on Twitter, but we're there on Twitter too, and on Facebook, which I don't think anyone's on, but we're there, but we don't do much. We also have a Letterboxd account, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Joe runs a Letterboxd and he always has like amazing lists that he puts up Actually, he does all the social media. True story. if you like the social media, you love Joe. Yeah. Yeah, so definitely check out our Letterboxd list, because we always put, it's not just stuff that we have on our site, but we always, like, Joe and I are always talking about, like, funny lists, like video drugs or, you know, something kind of like what we talk about when we're just, like, hanging out. And we're like, we should make that a Letterboxd list. So we do a lot of work there, too.
Excellent. We'll be sure to put links to all of that stuff in show notes for folks to discover those lists and make sure you're following Bleeding Skull and Annie and Joe and all the great work that they are doing. But yeah, like Lance said, Annie, thanks once again so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal: providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Erica, next month is August.
No.
No?
Correction. It's Shawgast.
That was like a Smartless episode, like an introduction. So what's going on? What's going on with Shawgast?
Shawgast, it is our... I say this with every time we do like Jewsploitation, when we do Horror Gets Back, when we do Jolly January, I'm like, it's our favorite month of the year. Literally every month of the year is our favorite month.
It's true.
You know, every 2 weeks when I get to see my friend Lance and talk about another horror movie or talk about 30 movies that we watched or whatever it may be, it's not my favorite time. But I genuinely love Shawgast because, you know, like Jewsploitation, we get to step a little bit outside of the horror box because a lot of these aren't always straight horror movies, because right. Shawgast is all about Shaw Brothers horror movies. And a lot of them skirt the line of fantasy, action, and horror and things like that. So
the best of all worlds.
Yes. So in August, both of our picks are going to be Shaw Brothers horror movies. The next movie that we are going to be covering is our first movie for Shawgast 2023. And we are going to be discussing the fantasy action horror movie, The Nine Demons from 1984. Directed by Chang Che, the GOAT.
Yeah.
This is a Faustian Shaw Brothers tale. So after selling his soul to the devil, Joey is given the power to control nine demons who have entered his body, but which also demand blood. With their help, Joey must save his childhood friend from a bloody massacre. This one has some really fun elements, like down in hell when he's selling his soul to the devil, or, you know, the equivalent of that in the Shaw universe. There's obviously going to be a heavy fantasy element going on here and lots of action and kung fu. This one's a lot of fun. This is available on YouTube. There is a DVD out there as well. So if you like, you go on Letterboxd and you see where it's available, it does link you to a DVD where you can buy it, but it is on YouTube. I'll put a link to it in show notes. It does have subtitles. Got uploaded recently, just in time for Shawgast, because they knew this was coming.
Hell yeah.
All right. So Nine Demons, 1984 for the next episode. If you aren't already, you can follow this podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Unsung Horrors. You can join our Discord. It's on our link tree. Join us. Say hi. Share your double feature picks. Let Matt know when there's dummy drops. You know, we cover important things. And let's see. Me, you can follow on Letterboxd, Instagram, and Twitter. What am I? Hex Massacre.
I'm El Shaibi on Instagram and Letterboxd.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks once again to Annie for joining us for this one. And we'll see you back for Shawgast, folks.
Bye.
Bye.
So nice to see you there. Talk like I'm Hey, it's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about a thousand cats would look like?
It's called Night of a Thousand Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video!
Woo!